So there are a lot of people on the right online who are not happy about the fact that the Trump folks have not released the Epstein data. Although I will say the one person who never committed to releasing all the Epstein data, Donald Trump. He said, I release UFO files, I'll release Kennedy files. Epstein, you know, we'll see.
Jamal, it's good to be back with you for our weekly Trailblaze therapy session. What do you got for us today? What's on your mind?
How you doing? So I'm paying attention to what's going on in Mag World. There seems to be a little bit of a meltdown happening around the president and Elon Musk and all the things the president's up to. And if you take a look around, I just think it is worth us talking about whether or not the president's going to be able to hold this big, unwieldy coalition together that includes both working people and these billionaires who want to have their way with the government and the rest of us.
Yeah, if you look at it though, the coalition really isn't lined up on a set of ideals that they all share. There's different pieces of the puzzle. They're all aligned around the personality of Donald Trump and how he's managed to tap into their id, the lizard part of the brain, and give people an excuse for who to blame for everything being wrong in the system, right? It's not politicians or Trump. It's in the case right now, it's often minority groups or it's the federal government payment system. None of those, though, traditionally have been their own massive coalition. So if the coalition breaks, it breaks because they lose faith in Trump to deliver on the promise. So they may be upset about a few things, but it's hard to imagine that they would ultimately abandon Trump, especially after this bill that they just passed, which had several Republican members effectively resigning from Congress. They're not going to run again because they know by voting for the bill, they lost their political careers.
Yeah, listen, I am willing to stipulate that if you look at the trees, Donald Trump's having a hard time. There are lots of things that are going badly, including, you know, just this week, he's now saying his 90 days for 90 deals and to keep the tariff rates is going to happen. But now he's saying, oh, wait, we're going to put the tariff rates on, but they don't go into effect until August 1st. So, which is effectively another delay of a month or 3 weeks for the tariff rates. But if you look at the trees, you could argue about each one of these things. If you look
trees?
At the forest,
what do you mean by the trees?
Well, if you look at the trees, you can argue. But if you look at the forest,
the trees are all blooming off season. It's climate change. We all have allergies that we didn't have before. I'm like, I'm definitely looking at those trees. I get you now.
No, I'm making an analogy. It's an analogy, right? Yeah. It's a metaphor. So the trees all look funky, but the forest for Trump looks pretty good. I mean, if you think about what he's up to for his people, he's challenging the status quo. He's got a couple of foreign policy wins, Iran being one where we haven't seen the blowback from Iran happen yet. But we have seen him be able to make this argument to the general public that he's, you know, decimated, obliterated, whatever word he wants to use around nuclear capability. We'll see what that looks like in a year or two. And then you look at what happened. He's getting with this bill. He's getting the bill he wanted passed when he wanted it passed. DOGE came in. They disrupted a bunch of federal government policies. So I may not like the things that he's doing, but it's very hard to argue that he's not effective at getting what he wants done. And we haven't even talked about the brutality of the anti-immigration stance of how the president is conducting that. But for average people in the country who are just watching the news 10 minutes a day or getting it on their phones 30 seconds or 15 seconds at a time, like, wow, this guy is kind of doing all the shit he said he was going to do.
Well, that's the idea that Trump, unlike previous presidents, has never said that he's going to govern for everybody. He's made it very clear he is governing and delivering for the people who voted for him and the people who sponsored him in terms of fundraising and financing, right? He's delivering for the oligarchs. He has 13 billionaires as head of cabinet agencies. They're not experts in what the agencies are doing. They just happen to have a lot of money, and Trump is rewarding them for supporting him. So it's less about the functions and services that government's going to offer. And Trump is very clear that he's going to deliver what he promised to a segment of society that showed up to vote for him, right? Like that's what it is at the end of the day. And what they voted for, as you mentioned, is a sense of revenge, a sense of cosmic justice of the system being broken down, of elites being brought down from the ivory tower, of people who don't belong here being pushed out, right? It's a sense of MAGA voters and Trump supporters get to reclaim this sense of confidence and place in society that they didn't think they had anymore.
Right. So I would only quarrel with this. I think that there are a couple of different populations. There are the core MAGA people who literally Trump can do whatever he wants. Nobody will ever care what he does. Then there are the people who maybe they voted for Joe Biden in 2020. Maybe they voted for Barack Obama in the past. Maybe they've never voted, but they voted for Donald Trump because they thought Donald Trump was going to be the disruptor. He was the one who was going to just throw gum in the works and make the elites and the institutions finally listen to them and make their lives better. Those are the people who I think are the ones who I don't think they voted for revenge. I really don't think they voted for revenge. I think they voted because they thought this guy is going to change things, even if it's uncomfortable and difficult. Things are going to be different after him than they were before him, and we'll see how we do. The question for the people who disagree with Trump is two things. One, did he actually deliver for those people? What have they gotten out of the deal? Did they actually get something out of this disruption? And the second thing is, what do we have to offer? What is the thing that we want to create in the world that's going to be different for them than existed before? And preserving those institutions is not going to be the thing that sells it. It's going to be something else that's different.
Yeah. Part of it also is they understood that Trump never disappeared and Trump has been who he is this entire time. So whether or not you like what Trump has to say, you know who he is. And there's a sense of he's being his version of blunt and honest. Now, he'll lie about facts and data points, but the story of Trump and what he's selling rings true. And we all know what it is, whether you like him or not.
That's absolutely true.
That was the mistake. That was the Biden-Harris switchover mistake, right? Is that sense that, oh, we've been lied to about what's really going on, right? And again, there's a right-wing narrative, but the idea was that, oh, the White House and Biden himself have been lying to us about what his condition is and how things are going on. And it's just that basic, at a moment where trust is driving whether or not institutions survive, it's also driving whether or not politicians survive, whether local entities survive, is how are you handling people's trust? And the Democratic Party didn't do a great job of it. I think they, you know, obviously did what they could in the moment, but didn't do a great job of it. And that's part of where Trump comes forward and still comes out as like, well, we know what we're going to get with you. But to your point, did Latino voters for Trump or people married to Latinos expect that their family members were going to be picked up? Or did you really, really just believe it was going to be criminals only? Right? Like, seriously, because many people said that at this point, it's a matter of people who just kind of generally look the same. And if they can get picked up and you can meet quota numbers, great. That's just kind of, you know, how things work when you don't have a straightforward system about this. So what are those voters thinking? The ones who post online, this is not what I voted for. I didn't expect this to happen. I'm like, there's millions of people who expected this to happen. We were warning you about it.
Yeah, but I guess they, you know, optimism is contagious. So people assume that things are going to work out for them.
So it's being delusional, but okay.
For sure. Well, you know, one person who seems to have sobered up, well, I don't know if he's sobered up, but he certainly seems to be taking a different tack, is Elon Musk.
Oh, yes. So
we heard this week that Elon Musk has decided that he's going to establish the America Party, his own party that will continue to go after government spending. And the thing about the America Party that sounds, I don't know, completely bogus and like it won't work. We'll get to the logistics of creating a political party, but it seems to be built around cutting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid right out of the budget so that we can deal with the federal debt. That seems to be the only issue that Elon Musk is really animated about, is whether or not we're going to cut entitlement spending. And where is the constituency for that?
Yeah, it's the Elon's version of politics where he just shows up and big stuff happens. Like, right, that's what he thinks it is that he showed up and he cut federal government spending. Well, congratulations. DOGE cut 600 employees from the National Weather Service, two or three of whom were actually critical to understanding whether or not the flooding was going to happen at those levels in Texas. And instead of that efficiency, the agency is now hiring people back through contractors and paying more money just to get the same experience they had before. So that's Elon Musk's brilliant management and efficiency of government. Then he tries to sway an election in Wisconsin, where he promises $1 million to one of the voters who votes to not have a liberal judge, loses that, right? So his judgment on politics and policy is no bueno. And it's not a surprise that his, in breaking with Trump, that those two egos could not survive together, that in breaking with Trump, he thinks that there is some animating coalition for being against the very programs that have Republicans resigning and not running again because they cut those programs. Like, the people in office know that by voting to cut Medicaid and SNAP and potentially Social Security, they're gone. Like, they don't have a political future, but Elon Musk thinks there is.
I know, it's completely asinine. And I just was reading a story today about USAID and how they cut all these programs from USAID, the International Development Agency. And now they are, now they're hiring these people back. But with, in a classic autocrat fashion, what's happening is, in order to get the program saved, you've got to find a patron, right? Somebody who Donald Trump likes, who is going to champion your program and will go to the autocrat, go to the emperor and tell him that they want this to stay. And if the emperor agrees, then they'll find a way to work it back in the budget. And part of the story was about how George W. Bush called Marco Rubio to try to save PEPFAR, right? His program to save, to work on AIDS in Africa. And so now that they're trying to save PEPFAR because George W. Bush cares about it, and they're leveraging probably some of his donors and friends who will also advocate to the president that there is a path for PEPFAR to be saved. So this is just classic kleptocratic government that we are witnessing take place right before our eyes, and Elon Musk creating a party that will put pressure on Republicans to try to make them cut more money out of things that their constituents like and want. Doesn't really seem like it has much of a future.
No, but it doesn't have a political future or an electoral future, right? So when you have multiple Republican senators, multiple members of Congress say they're not going to run again, you're like, oh, you're going to lose the Senate, or you're going to lose the House in this next election. And an emphasis on electoral future, because that's not guaranteed with where we're headed right now, that there's going to be a free and fair election in the way that we've understood it, or that be an election at all. Trump has openly said he's open to a third term. How that happens constitutionally, no idea. Steve Bannon has done a whole rant and has a whole public presence about how Trump should and can run for a third term. So that is how Putin has been in charge of Russia for more than 20 years, is by having fake elections where he can say, oh, look, I got voted in, I have more power. And he had the Duma, the equivalent of Congress, give up its power. They voted to give up their power to the autocrat. So you have this veneer of an electoral process, but most people aren't involved in it. There's no check on the power. So it's autocracy, right? It's a legal way of getting to an autocracy and completely undermining the spirit of what our country is supposed to do.
And then I wonder if the alternative that emerges is something that's similar to what you may see in some South American countries or some other developing countries, where the opposing party is also a member of the ruling elite, right? In a way that, you know, you can say, everybody's a ruling elite in America, you know, but the truth is Barack Obama was a state senator for two years before he ran for president. Or, you know, Kamala Harris is a state official. She was, you know, not a huge millionaire, like whatever. Mm-hmm. So there are some cases where in America where you don't always have two members of big ruling families. But what happens in some countries is, you know, you have to be so big and strong and powerful with the other oligarchs that your oligarchs fight the other people's oligarchs. Mm-hmm. And then you're just trading out one part of the oligarchy for another part of the oligarchy.
Yeah.
And that may be how you end up with somebody like, I'm not saying he's this person, but somebody like a Gavin Newsom, let's just say, right? Gavin Newsom's from one of the wealthiest families in America. Gavin Newsom has connections at the same levels that Trump has connections, including with some of the same people, some of whom may have been in Trump's family at one point. You know, he's got all those connections. And so you find somebody who is part of the ruling elite who can challenge the current class and see whether or not at least they'll advocate for the people that we all care about.
I mean, they do and they don't, right? Like that's part of what the MAGA movements and progressive movements have called for, this fundamental shift and change. This idea that the center was ultimately people who already had power quibbling over details. There wasn't a fundamental reset on how government offers services and provides for, you know, provides for the people. right? That didn't happen. And I can see how after Father Bush followed by Son Bush, the idea of, you know, husband Clinton followed by Senator spouse, or wife Clinton, right? Like that was an entire generation of politics. Those were the ruling families. And that turned a lot of people away. Mm-hmm. And whether it turned them to the left or to the right, I mean, that's certainly, you had a Bernie movement, a progressive movement come out from that. And we saw, so it's interesting to see how many of the people who were anti those types of elite monopolies can suddenly get behind a Trump forever.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about American politics is we try this, right? We try to do these elite things. There's a reason why nobody ever named Rockefeller or Mellon or Carnegie ever became president, even though some of them wanted to be. You know, we tend to not like it. Trump was actually, you know, an anomaly because he was a brand name rich person. But the difference with Trump is he wasn't a legacy rich person. He was somebody who people viewed as being kind of even though he got gifted millions of dollars by his father to start his business, he was sort of seen as like a up by a bootstraps, you know, fight his way to the top, you know, certainly outside of the elite circles, rich person. And so, you know, but if you look at the people who actually have won the presidency over the last decades, I mean, you think about Richard Nixon, who was born poor. You think about Ronald Reagan, who was born poor. Bill Clinton, who was born poor. Barack Obama. Like, you know, you see middle class, you know, you see these people who really are, they embody outsiderism, and we try to run these establishment figures, and usually the outsider person is very often able to take down the insider rich person, whether they're a Democrat or Republican.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like that's then what the Democrats need to be doing, is painting Trump as the ultimate insider elite figure taking care of money. You hear that messaging about the oligarchs, but then running another millionaire spoon, you know, silver spoon in mouth person as a future president wouldn't be the best idea. Like, right? What's the contrast? Again, assuming that we actually even have another election.
Oh, the pessimism abounds.
Yeah. Just say, when the president of the United States and one of his senior strategists tells you that they want a third unconstitutional election, I listen. I hear it. Like, this is not me making this up. What I mean is, assuming that we have an election that is free and fair and that we all consider to be anything other than just, you know, poster board.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one thing that the MAGA people are have been angling for that they haven't gotten, and it looks like the administration is starting to waver on this, is access to the Epstein files, access to all what's happening after, you know, Epstein gets elected and gets arrested and then obviously dies by what we say is what the officials call suicide in prison. But there's been this conspiracy theory on the right for, you know, years that that's not what happened. Right. That Epstein was blackmailing rich people and all these things were happening. And now some of those conspiracists are now in the government and they're saying, no, there's nothing to see here. Nothing happened, including, you know, the heads of the FBI. And then including also Pam Bondi, who is the attorney general, who is not releasing, you know, all the names who are on the Epstein client list. So there are a lot of people on the right online who are not happy about the fact that the Trump folks have not released the Epstein data. Although I will say the one person who never committed to releasing all the Epstein data, Donald Trump. he said, I release UFO files. I'll release Kennedy files. Epstein, you know, we'll see. We don't want innocent people to get drug into something that they didn't do wrong.
He is happy to take advantage of the movement and use those votes to get into office. And that means nothing for what he actually is going to do when he's in office. It is actually, I think, the more salient thing that Elon Musk can keep doing on the internet, rather than trying to build a third party from scratch, which, again, don't even know what the constituency is. And also, Elon, like, who do you think is begging you to run a third party? Like, you already had your turn in government and it was a disaster.
You know who wants him to run a third party?
Who?
All the political consultants who are going to make millions of dollars trying to help him establish.
Right, so all of that, like, keep him distracted there. But if Elon Musk is the one who said, oh, well, you know, I've broken with Trump, and wait till you see him, you know, he's mentioned in the Epstein files. So that's to me is more challenging for the MAGA coalition, is the turnabout on some key issues. You know, the idea of government transparency and revealing files, and now the attorney general saying that there is no list either. And you mentioned this earlier, the idea that the United States was not going to be involved in foreign wars. And now not only has bombed Iran, but also is rearming Ukraine. Like, right, there's just these things there that can be cracks in the coalition, assuming that anybody in that coalition is still watching for policy and not just for the personality of Trump.
Yeah. I mean, look, I do think there are people, like, I think there are people like my neighbors who voted for Trump, I'm sure, who voted for him just because they were economically having a hard time. And then wanted somebody who was going to change things. And they were probably, I think they're Democrats generally. They're certainly, in the way they live their lives, pretty open. They're, you know, one of them's a daughter of immigrants and the other one's an African-American guy. I think that there are people, people in my family who I think may also have voted for Trump, although they would probably never say it at the dinner table, but they're just contrarians, right? And they believe that the status quo needs to be upset. So I think there are people who voted for Trump for a bunch of reasons that are not because he wants to establish kind of a white dominated autocracy, but they thought they were going to get something out of the deal. Mm-hmm. And I think they're learning very clearly they're not.
No, you gave up vote and power and you got more of the same people who have already messed up life in America. That's what this is. And we can leave it on that cheery note, Jamal.
Well, I think what we're seeing is there's a prospect of a MAGA meltdown. And the question is whether or not it comes to fruition, or is this just going to be another thing where Donald Trump gets forgiven and he gets to stay in power and be in charge and all the rest of us are, you know, fumbling around. But I will say this to my Democratic colleagues. The one thing the Mondami race in New York should show you, if you don't believe in anything about the policy, though, is that you've got to have an idea. You've got to have some policies. You've got to have some ideas about what you want to do with the country, what you want to do with your office, how you're going to make life better for people, how you're going to challenge the status quo, challenge the institutions. I'm fine. Come up with some free market, pro-growth ideas, find that could do it. I'm fine. Come at it. Do it. But what you cannot do is say, we're going to do more of what we've done before, only with more people power. That's not, or we're going to wear like interesting clothes when we do, you know, TikTok videos. That's not going to be what solves this problem.
Well, also what's not going to solve it is trying to recycle the same people who got us here into this problem. Simple as that, right? Like just stop trying to bring back people from the past simply because they have fundraising power. That is not what is going to win this next election cycle. Is strictly money. For Democrats to want to be credible and also win, it's the people on their side. So appeal to people instead of appealing to, like you said, another set of elite oligarchs. Like that's not going to be a winning solution for anybody going forward.
I agree. All right.
I like ending on agreeing. That's a little bit better than the pessimism I throw your way every now and then.
You know, pessimism is just it's to me that leads to a place where I'm like, well, let's just all go to the beach and see what happens.
Sure, I'm down. Let's do it.
All right, good to see you. Talk to you next week.
Take care.